circle of nature.
The law's fate hangs in the balance thanks to the Supreme Court. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney broadcasting live, taking America tonight on the road, just a stone's throw away from the Supreme Court. Three really, really huge days. The main event should take place on Tuesday, and that's the arguments on whether the court, you know, what the court's going to do with the individual health mandate. The government, we've talked about this before in our first hour. The government's case is pretty simple, that Congress has the authority to regulate interstate commerce, and the mandate does that by regulating the financing of health care. And we see that, you know, we talk about this is basically 18% of the nation's economy that we're talking about. So, as we move through here on the show, joining us now, perfect timing, Vincent DeMarco just pulled up. He is the president of Maryland Citizens Health Initiative, and he's an adjunct assistant professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. I'm out of breath just saying that. I need preventative medicine, I think. I thought I was in decent shape. Thanks, Vincent,
Thank
for stopping
you.
By. Well, first of all, in looking at what's happened here, give me your point of view when the law, all the years of going back and forth with health care, and when the law first kicked in, because
well,
that was 2 years.
The Affordable Care Act is a tremendous public health victory for the people of America. It's going to expand health care to 30 million people and make health care affordable for all of us. And it's already provided substantial benefits for people. There are millions of young people out there and their families who are able to stay on health care up to age 26 because of the Affordable Care Act. There are thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of small businesses that are able to provide health care for their employees because of the Affordable Care Act's tax credits. There are untold numbers of seniors who are having trouble affording prescription drugs who are better able to afford it because of the law, and young people, children, who are not being denied health care because of pre-existing conditions. These are tremendous public policy gains.
What do you think is the biggest misconception? Because here on this show, we'll talk about it. Sometimes I'll have business owners call up and say, I don't know what they're talking about. It's going to cost too much money. I can't afford to insure all my people. Is it because the law hasn't fully taken effect, or there's confusion as to how it's going to be implemented with the states?
Well, the interesting point is when you do polling on the Affordable Care Act, most people, when you talk about the specific provisions of the law, they're all in favor of it.
Right.
They like it.
Absolutely. Republicans, Democrats, independents,
right, exactly,
whatever.
All across the board. But when you ask about the law in general, there's skepticism, and it's fascinating when you look at the deeply into the polls, you find that some of the people who are most against it are against it because they think it's government-run single-payer health care, that they're going to lose the health insurance they have. That's one of the main problems. Ironically, another group of people who oppose the law oppose it because it's not single-payer health care. And that's the real irony here. Some of the people on the left oppose it because it doesn't go far enough. People on the right oppose it because they think it goes too far.
Right.
The important point here is, if you have health care that you like, it's not going to be changed. You're not going to be thrown off it, but it will be made more affordable because of the health care law. I say to my friends on the left, you've got to like this law. It's going to provide health care to 30 million people. It may not be as far as you want, but it is the best we can do, and you've got to come around and be part of it. The important point for Americans to know is that right now, the system is bad for all of us, not just for the uninsured, but for all of us. I'll tell you a story about someone in Maryland. We did a Medicaid expansion in Maryland under the leadership of Governor O'Malley, Lieutenant Governor Brown, which expanded health care to 300,000 people. One of those people came to a press conference we had and told us how she was a young mother, her husband worked full-time, they couldn't afford health care, she was desperate. She went to get insurance for her kids and was told, well, there's something for you now, too. So she got a Medicaid card. A few weeks later, she was feeling ill. Instead of trying to sleep it off like most uninsured people do, she went to a doctor because she had this card.
Right.
The doctor said, thank goodness you came here. You were developing something that would have killed you. And if you hadn't had this card, she would have been dead. So she came to our press conference and said, thank you for saving my life. And it helped her, of course, and her family tremendously. But what I want Americans to listen to is that if she had not had her Medicaid card,
right,
she probably wouldn't have died right away. She probably would have gone to a hospital and run up huge bills before she died. And would her surviving husband been able to pay it? No way. We would have all paid it. According to Families USA, every time you pay a health insurance premium, $1,000 of it goes to cover the help the uninsured. So, in effect, it's a hidden health care tax that we all pay for covering the uninsured. By expanding health care to people like her, we're benefiting all of us. And in Massachusetts, where they have the law that we're modeling a lot of our federal law on,
sure,
they have expanded health care to 97% of the population. Premiums are going up less fast than other parts of the country. And their uncompensated care, this hidden health care cost, is going down. So it's a big win for everyone. That's why the people of America are going to rally around it, I believe. And I think this Supreme Court debate is going to help get the message out about how good this law is.
I was going to say that. I think there's a lot of misconceptions. Do you think even on the right, even lots of people who are saying, the constitutionality, it's that whole thing about the mandate and the government and all that. I mean, obviously people have ideological ideas and we're dug into certain things. But as you said at the top, everybody agrees, I think, no matter what their perspective is, that why shouldn't you if you have a pre-existing condition, why can't you get coverage?
Right. And you can't protect people from that without requiring everybody to pitch in their fair share. I think if you think about it, if someone has a good amount of money, a lot of money, and just don't want to purchase health care, if they get really sick, we may have to pay their costs, and that's not fair. And I think it's perfectly legitimate, as you were saying, under the Commerce Clause, for the government to say everybody should do their fair share so that we're not overburdened through a hospital care that nobody can pay for. So I think the Supreme Court's going to realize that this is really right down the middle constitutional, just like the Social Security Act, the Civil Rights laws, Medicare and Medicaid. Remember, all those laws were challenged in court,
sure,
and publicly. But right now, who's going to talk about repealing Social Security law? Nobody.
Right.
And then I think in a generation, it's going to be the same with the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. Vincent, thanks so much
for
stopping by.
Thank you for having me. Good luck.
Appreciate it. It was great.
Good
luck. Slid right in. He knew what he was doing. He stepped up. He's a pro. Vincent DeMarco. And we continue the rest of the show, of course, looking at all sides, as I say, of this health care debate. I wanted to be fair, and I wanted to make sure that we looked at people who supported the law and certainly people who don't support the idea of this law. And you know how I feel. I feel as though the problem is in the implementation. The problem is in a utopian world. It sounds so, so good. And if only it were that good. The problem ultimately lies in trying to provide health care, I think, for so many of these companies that are saying, including big corporations like McDonald's, that they can't, what are they going to do? They can't afford to insure their people. They can't afford to insure their people. Or I have friends who are going to work for people who are saying, listen, here's part of the benefits. We're just going to give you the money. You go get your own health care because we're worried as this law starts to be fettered out, how it's going to affect us and how we're not going to be able to hire any more people. So anyway, we're looking at all aspects of it, the healthcare, huge, momentous day, Supreme Court, thrilled to be in Washington. Stay with us. A lot more coming on this version of America Tonight. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw for free enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states it's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Would it save you time to get the best quality water filters and the best quality storable foods from one company? You bet it would, and now you can at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Big Berkey Water Filter products and great-tasting, long-lasting, storable, wise foods are both now available on one website, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Wise foods, ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches and come with a 25-year shelf life. Big Berkey Water Filters are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water. Combine Berkey water filters with Wise Foods for an unbeatable preparedness combination. Get free shipping on every order over $50. And GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit Big, B-E-R-K-E-Y, waterfilters.com. Or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-B-E-R-K-E-Y. Or go to BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com.
Front and center, everybody's buzzing about it in Washington, D.C. Now with the second anniversary of the Affordable Health Care Act, here we go. The Supreme Court, 3 days of oral arguments in the lawsuit challenging Obamacare, and a case that's historically significant, but more than historically significant, it affects every single one of us. We need no introduction with this because we've been talking about it for a very long time here on ATN. Jean Carr joins us. She's in the wings right now with the National Federation of Independent Business. Jean, thanks for popping on ATN.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So this is big, and when we look at it from the business point of view, and just even saying that National Federation of Independent Business, you think of how many businesses there are in this country, small business, the backbone of commerce in the United States, and entrepreneurial endeavors couldn't be bigger, and they're getting crushed by the weight of trying to afford health care. In fact, if anything, I've heard from plenty of people who have called this show and people we've had on as guests that it's not affordable, that it's gone in the opposite direction. So far, as I said, this is the two-year anniversary. What have you seen?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, health care has been the number one issue of the NFIB membership. We have about 350,000 small business owners as members for decades of rising health insurance costs. So then, you know, Congress comes in 2 years ago and they say, oh, we're going to help small business and we're going to lower costs. Well, guess what? The opposite happened. Our members are telling us their premiums are already going up. Some of them have lost their plans already, and the future is quite grim unless we are successful in the coming months.
Yeah. So the key things, and for almost 2 years you've been fighting this, you've fought the law in court that long. What are the key things you think that that people don't understand? I mean, maybe we get the threat of it that you would be forced to buy in, and isn't this a fix for the economy? What do you think it is that that is cloak and dagger that people don't really get, Gene?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, if you think about it, what Congress could have done is say, well, we're gonna tax people. We're gonna put a new tax out there that pays for whatever we're doing with health care. But they knew that would be politically unpalatable, that they couldn't get it through. So instead, they disguised it as this individual mandate. So if you don't buy health insurance, you pay a fine. You are penalized. You are a criminal, you know, mm-hmm. in the eyes of the U.S. government. So it was very sneaky, quite frankly. But from my perspective and my members' perspective, I'm so glad that they screwed up because, you know what? It's unconstitutional. You can't force individuals to buy something. It's not American. It's not constitutional.
Yeah. Riding on that, just on that alone, do you have a good feeling about this case? Because everybody's trying to handicap it. Everybody's looking in a crystal ball. And you hear all kinds of things from constitutional lawyers and others. What's your gut feeling tell you?
You know, we are feeling really good. And I have the privilege, because I'm close to it, to have heard our attorneys, who are amazing, and our lead attorney, Michael Carvin, has argued before the court something like a dozen times. He's won every case he's ever argued before the Supreme Court. And I've had the privilege of listening to him walk through our arguments. And I listen to him. I'm not a lawyer, but I have common sense. And I listen to him and I think, oh my gosh, we are going to win this thing. It just, when you hear him, it's smart and it's legally solid, but it also makes so much common sense. So I feel very good about our chances.
And you know what the argument's going to be? The argument is going to be, because you talk about the constitutionality, that there's a thing called the Commerce Clause that gives Congress the power, authority, whatever you want to call it, to actually push or regulate the sale of goods such as health insurance. So what's the comeback, do you think, for that?
The fact that you're trying to regulate people in the case of this law who are not in the marketplace yet. Okay, the Commerce Clause, if you're in the marketplace, if you, you know, are already purchasing something or doing something, but to force someone to buy it, that's not what it was designed for. You can't push people into the marketplace. The Commerce Clause is there for people that have already chosen to be in the marketplace of whatever product or service.
Yeah. And here's what's interesting, too. You know, we keep focusing, and rightfully so, because this is the challenge, about the individual health mandate, that part of the law. But we haven't even talked about the entire law. So if the mandate is removed, what do you think happens? Would it allow the other provisions to stay, or it doesn't seem like it would hold up? Wouldn't it all collapse?
Yeah, I mean, the individual mandate, because of the way it makes the math work, you know, you bring all these young, healthy people and you force them to make a bad economic decision for themselves to buy health insurance, and that pumps all this money into the insurance system to pay for the health care of others, essentially. So if you take that away, if you take the mandate away, the numbers don't work anymore. There's no choice but to rates to totally skyrocket. But the really important thing here is that Congress didn't even put in what they call the severability clause, okay? So we are arguing in front of the court that it's not severable. The whole thing is completely glued together, and if you pull out one piece, and the individual mandate being the foundation, if you will, you pull out the foundation, it has to fall.
Yeah. You mentioned how big that your membership is, and I, in introducing you, I mentioned the fact that we know that the backbone of this country is made up of businesses. And of what did you start to hear of all of your from your members when the health care bill became a law and became a reality? What did you start to hear? Did you get just a ton of email?
Yeah, a lot of it I probably can't say on the radio. I mean, small business owners they're pretty passionate about freedom. And frankly, the government is knocking on their door and sending them mail and calling them all the time anyway, and they already feel the burden of government at both the state and federal level. And this, boy, did this push them over the edge. And again, talk about a sore spot. They're already struggling to afford insurance for themselves, for their families, and their employees. And it just pushed them over the edge. I mean, they're mad as heck.
Yeah. The National Federation of Independent Business with 26 state co-plaintiffs. Am I right in this? Our party says, as you were saying, you felt privileged to be able to hear some of what was going on with the lawyers. You're definitely involved. I mean, you're right in the middle of this. You're in the heart of this, arguing about the mandate. So actually appearing before the Supreme Court, am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, actually, and if it weren't for our NFIB's specific argument about the individual mandate, this case would not be in the federal court. I mean, in the Supreme Court. We're it. Our argument is considered the strongest. We have the best standing. I mean, if you look at all the lawsuits that were filed over the past 2 years, let's say it's like a bracket system because it's basketball season, and, you know, some people won their suits and some lost, and it went through all the lower appellate courts. Well, NFIB's suit was the one that just kept moving up those brackets, and here we are.
And do you think a lot of that, I mean, obviously you have good attorneys, but do you think a lot of that was really flushing out that constitutionality and that whole thing on the mandate, that never before have we forced people to buy something they didn't want for the benefit of other people?
Yeah, it's interesting. This has been the question that the opposition, in our case the federal government, the opposition has not been able at any level of any court so far to answer that question of, okay, if you force people to buy health insurance, what can't you force them to buy? Can't you force them to buy a Chevy Volt? Can't you force them, you know, to start a 401k? And the government has no answer to that question.
Yeah. So that has to, we go back to the same thing as we're handicapping it. We can't help but do that. Because you mentioned basketball, and we all want to be on the winning side.
That's right.
So it does have to give you confidence that the NFIB is on the right path.
I do. I think we're on the right side of history. We're on the right side of freedom. It's, you know, again, when I listen to our attorneys lay it out, I think, well, of course you can't. I mean, of course the government can't force me to buy something. That's absurd. You know, even as a legal scholar, as a layperson, you know the government's never forced you to buy something. It speaks to your heart and it speaks to your desire for freedom, and that's pretty strong in our membership.
Yeah. In one sense, and I said about the historic element of it, the 3 days of the oral arguments, I mean, there has to be kind of a sense of excitement now that you're finally after these years, boom, this is it. This is D-Day. This is it right here.
Oh, man, we are so excited. I mean, when we found out that our case had been accepted and we found out that they dedicated 6 hours of oral arguments, and that's more than the court has allocated since Brown versus the Board of Education. I mean, we've always believed it was very important and very special, but when the court decided to take it and they allocated that time, wow. I mean, we are beside ourselves. And I have to tell you, you know, I live and work in Washington, D.C., and I walk by the National Archives every night on my way to the metro to commute home, and I look at the archives, and I think the Constitution is in there, and baby, we are fighting for you.
Yeah, I like that analogy. What a picture you have painted for us, without a doubt. All right, Jean Card, I love your enthusiasm for the National Federation of Independent Business. These are the big boys fighting for this against the individual health mandate and the constitutionality of it. Jean, thanks for joining us.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses 3 groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com, Terraganics.com. Or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What you're about to hear will help you remember where to find the best water filter products at the best prices on the web. There. Did you hear it? BerkeyShop.com. With the newest Berkey products in stock, the best prices on Berkey products anywhere, fast free shipping, and the most amazing customer service. BerkeyShop.com, home of all Berkey water filter products like the Big Berkey, for producing clean drinking water by removing contaminants, chemicals, heavy metals, and even fluoride. Call 1-888-6-BERKEY to get your Berkey water filter, perfect for home, travel, camping, or disasters. And BerkeyShop.com is the perfect site to get your Berkey, because we're open 24-7 with free shipping and no sales tax. Even celebrities and NFL athletes shop at BerkeyShop.com. Call 1-888-6-BERKEY to order your Berkey products. That's 888-6-BERKEY or go to BerkeyShop.com. 888-6-BERKEY or go to BerkeyShop.com. For everything Berkey, shop BerkeyShop.com.
That's what it sounds like when a burglar kicks in the door of a dark house that looks like no one is home. Don't let your home be the next target. Make it look like someone is home watching television with Fake TV. Fake TV is a small electronic device that makes the same light as a real television. So from outside, it looks like someone is home watching TV. Fake TV plugs in just like a lamp on a timer, but is far more convincing to burglars. Fake TV deters burglars, costs far less than an alarm, and is highly recommended by numerous police departments. Use it anytime you're away from home. To order your Fake TV for only $34.95, go to FakeTV.com. Or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. Each additional Fake TV is only $29.95. So get one for you and one for a loved one for safety, security, and peace of mind for both of you. Call 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to FakeTV.com. FakeTV.com, the burglar deterrent.
In the past, I've taken a lot of different vitamins, some through health food stores, some that friends recommend.
Colleen talking about her experience with Super C Veg.
And with the Super C Veg, I was seeing a lot better results.
Super C Veg with Vita D and C-Cal is the most powerful dietary food supplement in the world today, and nothing else comes close.
Super C Veg is a whole food that makes me feel good.
Think of Super C Veg as the un-vitamin.
I have taken other things, and they just didn't work. This seems to work for me.
And Super C Veg comes with a 90-day money-back guarantee.
Store-bought vitamins do not have the supplement and the full, whole feeling I have from Super C Veg.
Get 15% off your first purchase on our website, SuperCVeg.com. That's Super, S-E-A-V-E-G.com. At checkout, enter coupon code UNVITAMIN. Or place your order at 866-C-VEG. That's 866-732-8344. Eating Super C Veg daily is eating right.
Washington, D.C., continuing our conversations about health care and the Supreme Court challenge. Elizabeth Hyder is with us. She's a chief counsel, this is big, for the Constitutional Accountability Society, or CAC, right? Is that what it is?
We usually say CAC.
All right. So you don't like CAC. CAC. Wow. So this sounds like a very big title. Obviously, you've done Supreme Court legislation before. Am I correct?
Yes.
And what's that like? Before we dive into all this other stuff, what was that? Take us back to the first time you did that. What was that like?
Well, you know, it's always, I remember the first time I went to the Supreme Court.
Right.
Was in a high school trip with my government class. And being the con law loving nerd that I was, I, you know, like nearly peed my pants because it was so exciting to just be in front of the justices and, you know, in this hallowed court of justice. So I was meant to do this, essentially, is what I'm saying. And, you know, it's very exciting. Every time I file a brief in the court, every time I go and listen to arguments, you know, I think it's very inspiring, even when I vehemently disagree. You know, I graduated law school the year after Bush v. Gore was decided. And for someone who obviously holds the Supreme Court in such high esteem, it was a very, very troubling time. But, you know, I think that I still have great faith in the court. and I have great faith that they'll do the right thing in the Affordable Care case.
All right, so talk about the Affordable Care case, because, and we'll back this up in talking about CAC. It's a think tank, right?
We're talking a law firm, Action Center.
Right, the push is the promise of the Constitution's text, as I understand it, and the history. So this is big. We talk about the Constitution a lot, and the Constitution has been bandied about with this law.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us why constitutionally this should stand.
So, you know, the Tea Party version of the Constitution bears little resemblance to our actual Constitution. You know, we had that weak central government that they advocate for, and it was in the Articles of Confederation, which was the precursor to our actual enduring Constitution. And that was such a failure, so dysfunctional, that George Washington said it nearly cost us victory in the Revolutionary War. So when the founders came together to draft our Constitution, they wanted to create a federal government that had sufficient power to enact national solutions to national problems. And that's exactly what Congress did when it looked at the healthcare crisis that we have in this country, with millions of Americans unable to get access to quality, affordable health care. And so there are, you know, to get a little more technical, the support for the Affordable Care Act comes from three main provisions in the Constitution. First, the Congress's power to regulate interstate commerce.
Which is what they're talking about day one.
So they'll probably talk about that tomorrow.
For the mandate?
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, with the healthcare industry comprising nearly 20% of our nation's economy, it's really hard to see how that isn't interstate commerce. Two, Congress's power to tax and spend for the general welfare. And that came up a little bit today in the discussions, whether or not the penalty for failing to purchase health insurance is a tax or whether it's, you know, something different. But third, and this I think is something that a lot of people overlook but is really important, so in addition to these specific powers that the Constitution gives Congress,
mm-hmm.
the Constitution also says that Congress shall have the power to pass laws that are, quote, necessary and proper to carrying out those other powers. And that is, you know, as our founders, Alexander Hamilton, George Washington, recognized, that is a very sweeping power given to Congress to use its judgment to find rational means of implementing their powers. And so what the challengers to the mandate are essentially doing is seeking a political do-over in the courts for a law that they don't like. But the Constitution says that, you know, as long as the law is, you know, doesn't violate any other provision of the Constitution, and, you know, last time I checked, there was no right to freeload off one's neighbors if you don't want to purchase health insurance, then, you know, the courts should defer to Congress's judgment that the mandate was a reasonable means of implementing other provisions that are clearly constitutional, like the requirement that insurance companies provide insurance to folks who have pre-existing conditions. And so, you know, honestly, I think that this is a case where the constitutionality of the law is actually really quite clear.
And, you know, your counterparts to that, what the argument is, they'll say that it's government intervention and the Constitution is what you said. The Constitution doesn't call for that, that it's too much of an expansion of the Constitution, of that term, and in using nationality. So do you think that'll be shot down? You were in the court.
Yeah. So in court this morning, the question was whether you have to pay a tax first and sue after. And so obviously here they're challenging the tax penalty that you would pay if you didn't purchase insurance. And so, you know, there's an argument that, well, we might have to wait to consider the constitutionality of the mandate
right.
until we actually pay that tax, which
right.
would probably be, you know, 2015, I guess.
Sure.
But the justices didn't seem inclined to delay ruling on the merits. So I think that, you know, when we're in court tomorrow and Wednesday, listening to the real meat of the challenge. You know, tomorrow is the challenge, is argument on the challenge to the mandate. Wednesday we get argument on the challenge to the Medicaid expansion in the act.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're going to get to those issues, and I think we're going to get a ruling on them by the end of the term in June.
You said something interesting. You said, you know, if you looked at our founding fathers freeloading off of our neighbors, is there something that people don't understand that they're already paying for? I have insurance. You have insurance. My husband's family has insurance. My mother has insurance. That all of us are paying for the people who don't have insurance, that it's a hidden cost?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the uninsured shift about $43 billion a year onto other market participants. And that's, you know, people who have insurance. You know, I think the numbers are that the uninsured, their uncompensated care makes the average American family's premium go up about $1,000 a year. I mean, that's real money to Americans who are playing by the rules, being responsible, purchasing health insurance, and making sure that they're not shifting these costs onto their neighbors and taxpayers. So this is real money. It's, you know, hospitals pay when folks come into the emergency room without insurance and run up bills that they can't afford to pay, and they pass those costs on. The taxpayers have about an extra $30 billion a year in extra burden because folks choose to be uninsured or can't purchase insurance because they can't afford it or because they can't get insurance at any cost because they have a pre-existing condition.
Yeah. You're familiar with the court. I love to. Yeah, it's just like when I do sports. We're doing the Final Four, predicting who's going to win, what's going to happen. So, and you've been an attorney since, what did you say, you graduated 2000?
2001.
2001.
Yeah.
And you've been, you know, filed briefs with the Supreme Court. You know the makeup of the court pretty well, I would say. So what do you think happens here? I mean, if you were going to crystal ball it for us, which is what you are here and you're doing, I'm sure.
Yes.
What do you say is going to happen?
Well, you know, I, especially being a lawyer, I feel like I have to give the disclaimer that, you know, you never know what the court's going to do. You never know how the, you know, whether the ball is going to tip in or out of the basket. But, you know, I think there's a, frankly, a good chance that we could see some conservative justices join with the more liberal justices to uphold the constitutionality of the act. And I say that because there have been some decisions recently that were authored by conservative justices or joined by conservative justices that really support significant federal power in the areas of the Commerce Clause and the Necessary and Proper Clause. So I could see Chief Justice Roberts, the swing vote, Anthony Kennedy, and even Justice Scalia coming over to the other side. I mean, Scalia wrote this opinion a few years ago in a case involving growing medicinal marijuana in your backyard for personal use in accordance with state law. It was legal in that state.
Sure.
And he said that the federal government could ban that. And so if you can ban a person who is growing medical marijuana for her own use in her backyard, I mean, you know, $43 billion a year of uninsured costs shifting to other market participants, gosh, that sounds a lot more like interstate commerce to me than what Justice Scalia has already said is constitutional.
Yeah.
So,
a lot of people are talking about that one. Do you think, because you see the speed of the court, I'm kind of spitballing with attorneys I know. We think by July 4th. What do you think?
Well, traditionally, the court's term ends the last day in June. And so, you know, traditionally, that's when you would get the opinion by. They can extend the term, but I think that they will want to get this opinion out. And, you know, it's very convenient for them if they do it on the last day of the term and then get the heck out of town and we're all left to deal with the aftermath.
No comment. I'm out fishing.
Right, exactly.
I've done my deal. What a pleasure. You're going to be in court tomorrow again?
Absolutely. And here on Wednesday to, our state legislators care deeply about the Medicaid expansion that the court will be considering on Wednesday. So I'll be there.
That's a big one. Elizabeth, thank you so much. We're going to continue here on America Tonight.
My pleasure.
That's the sound of your door being kicked in by an intruder with a single kick. That's the sound of the same door now protected by the Door Sentinel at MySafeDoor.com. Go to MySafeDoor.com right now and watch the amazing video. At MySafeDoor.com, you'll learn how to turn your home into a fortress with the Door Sentinel. 16 kicks later, and the Door Sentinel is still holding strong. MySafeDoor.com. That's MySafeDoor.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Healthy soils grow healthy plants. So before you plant your survival garden this year, is your soil healthy? Maximize your crisis garden soil with EM1 from Terraganix. EM1 Organic Soil Conditioner, Fertilizer Amendment, and Compost Accelerant provides healthier gardens and faster, efficient garden composting. EM1 from Terraganix.com quickly improves soil structure by increasing nutrient availability and converting organic matter into soil humus. This improves seed germination and root growth, improves plant quality, size, color, flavor, nutrient value of fruits and vegetables, and improves shelf life. And when rain is not in the forecast, no worries. EM1 improves moisture retention in soils, helping reduce drought stress. Just like you prepare all else, prepare your crisis garden for maximum yields with EM1 from Terraganix.com. Order now at TerraGanix.com or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganix. Life's getting better.
Spring is here, growing season. The economy is not getting any better. In fact, it's getting worse. Think about it. At this rate, how will your life be in a month or even a year? Maybe you've been putting things off, but the time to act is now. The country is running out of food. You need to get your seeds before it's too late. At OrganicaSeed.com, you'll find one of the largest online selections of heirloom seeds, survival seed packs, as well as the giant vegetable seed collections that can feed you and your family for years. Grow your very own fresh vegetables, wheatgrass, fruits, herbs, rice, tea, coffee, and tobacco. With detailed growing guides available to you at no charge, you can maximize your harvest and investment. And the best part? All orders ship within 24 hours. So head over to OrganicaSeed.com. That's OrganicaSeed.com. OrganicaSeed.com today.
Everybody, Kate Delaney, thrilled to be broadcasting from Washington, D.C. A lot happening, obviously, with the Supreme Court, and we're going to dive deep into that as the show continues on. But even the politicians have to eat, and they have their favorite recipes. Very pleased to welcome to the show, and she's in our virtual green room. We didn't give her anything to eat or drink because I was afraid she would critique it. Linda Bauer, who has appeared all over the place. If you tune on any of the morning shows, you probably have seen her in the past. Or if you have picked up any newspaper, you probably read one of her columns, or food or travel column. And let's just say she's done it all and been all over the world. So she's got a book out called Capitol Hill Cooks. And basically it's a collection of favorite recipes from all kinds of people, from George Washington to current President Obama, people in Congress. So we're excited to have Linda on the show. Hey, Linda, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Let's talk about, first of all, before we dive into some of the recipes, the great thing about your book, and this will resonate with America Tonight listeners, is it benefits military folks. Tell us about that. Tell us who it benefits.
That's right. It benefits Helping a Hero, which is an organization that builds homes for veterans who lose their limbs in the war or are badly disabled. Or if they have a home, they'll come in and retrofit it so that it can work for their basic problem.
Wow. And why did you choose Helping a Hero? I think it's terrific that you did, by the way. But how did that come about?
Actually, the first two printings helped another charity that did similar work, and I was so blown away by going and meeting the kids from Helping a Hero at one of their events, and Laura Bush came down, and they gave away 20-some homes to these young men and women who've been so brave and such amazing heroes, and I was so impressed with the people on the board. None of them take a salary, and I just have never seen a charity. I've done five other books for charity. I've never seen a charity that I love so much. In fact, yesterday I was at the Houston Rodeo with many of them, and it breaks your heart to see some of our young men and women who, one of them yesterday had one arm, and that was the only limb he has. And so to see that we can help and make a difference in their lives just by simply purchasing a book, and in the front it tells how to give more to this charity and tells all about it, it's really an honor for me. I've never done anything I've been so happy about.
Oh, good for you. And more reasons to pick up the book, folks, listening to this. The former First Lady, now she likes good food. I've met Laura Bush a few times. Classy woman. And I met her first when she was the governor, in the governor's mansion, of course, married to George before he was president. But she's into cooking and into good food. Did you get anything from the Bushes?
Yes, I did. In fact, I have every single president that's in there has some amazing recipes, but I liked some of her recipes were carrot muffins and a really excellent eggnog. And as you well know, she's famous for her hot chocolate, which she served at the White House. And then there's another mushroom soup in there that's from George Bush. So a lot of them contributed many recipes, not just one, which was really, really an honor for all of us to be part of, I think.
All right, so you go from mushroom soup and the carrots and whatnot to George Washington. So we know you didn't channel George Washington. How did you find out what George Washington liked?
Well, you know, if you have the chance when you're in Washington to go to Mount Vernon, they have a restaurant there. And I visited it for one of the columns I was writing, and I fell in love with this food, and I thought it was just so much fun. And I'd been collecting recipes for years to do this book. And so I got Martha Washington's cake and eggnog and candy and all kinds of things. And I have to tell you, it's just such a thrill to have that. I get more comments probably on his recipes than any other one.
Yeah, you got to love that. So the one that you like the best, though, because as you said, you had all these different presidents. So it's tough to drill that down. But what one did you personally, Linda, like the best?
My favorite recipe, which I've done on a couple of the national shows, is Reagan's pumpkin pecan pie. Being a food writer for 25 years, I didn't think anything could kind of surprise me after all the travels we do. But that is the essence of pumpkin pie, but the goodness of pecan pie. So it's a little bit sweet, but yet it's got that healthy aspect of the pumpkin. And it is so good. You can freeze it. Anybody can make it in a matter of minutes. And you know, my husband worked for five presidents, and he was my favorite. I mean, the parties that he threw were my favorite. So it's a real exciting thing for me to do. And then on the other side of the aisle, I love JFK's recipes. I thought his, as far as anybody's goes, were the most down-to-earth, amazing recipes for somebody who had come from such a privileged background.
Yeah, no kidding. Your husband is Colonel Steve Bauer. You said he worked for five presidents. What did the colonel do?
He was the senior military social aide for Nixon, Ford, Carter, and then he had a staff job for Bush and Reagan. So we spent a lot of time in Washington, and, you know, they run the state dinners and all those kind of things. When you turn on the news, the person usually on the president's side who's the introduction officer was my husband.
Oh, you got to meet a lot of neat people, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really fun. It was a great time, and he truly enjoyed it, and he wrote a book about it at ease in the White House and lectures all over the world because people love to know that side, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Did you have, because you obviously met some of those people too, we've talked about favorite recipes, did you have a favorite person you met or world leader or celebrity during all that time?
I would tell you the truth is I loved some of the chefs. I loved Henry Haller, who was there during the Reagan administration. I liked a lot of those people because it just blew my mind that they could, you know, produce such fabulous food for world leaders in such a vast quantity. And it was always excellent. And it's just so much fun to know somebody like that.
Yeah,
those
no kidding.
They're really talented people, and they have a lot on their plate.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned in the Carter administration, he worked for the Carter administration too. Everybody thinks of peanuts and peanut farmer and all that kind of stuff with former President Carter. What were his favorite recipes?
And you know, it's a really easy one. It's a peanut brittle that is so good, and I've had a lot of people write me letters and say that's now their favorite. And he's got a toffee recipe in there that's fantastic. So It was kind of an interesting thing, you know, to see what he would do. But his peanut brittle is real easy to make.
Yeah. I love peanut brittle. Oh, you're making me hungry.
Yeah, me too. I know.
How about the Clintons? I don't know much about their food tastes.
You know, I had to call her office 10 times to get a recipe. I had the hardest time. I thought, I'll never get anything. And it really was nice to get that because it was his enchiladas and things like that before he decided to lose weight. So they're really delicious. And you can always cut down. I like the fact the enchilada recipe had skim milk in it. I thought that was really fun.
Yeah. Did you, I mentioned that you popped up all over the place. You've been on Fox and Friends and you've been on a Martha Stewart show. What was it like being on Martha Stewart show?
That was fun. I did the radio show for an entire hour. And when they invited me, I said, what are we going to talk about for an hour? And, you know, we actually ran over. But it was fun because people can call in and talk and ask you questions about the different people. And almost everybody, even if they don't like Congress, and I know many of us are unhappy with what's going on, is they like to know what that person likes to eat because these people are some of the wealthiest, obviously, and, you know, best traveled people in the world. And it was really funny to me when we were doing that, so many people came up and said, okay, my congressman so-and-so, what's his favorite? And it's a taste of America because I asked them, what are your favorite recipes and why? And so they wrote stories about why it's their favorite. So if you don't cook and you just want to help the troops, buy the book. But the other reason is if you like to learn a little bit about America,
you know, like
Michelle Bachmann's favorite has rhubarb in it. Because she's from Minnesota. And it's just fascinating to me why they like their favorites and what the story was with it. And on the other side of the aisle, Scott Brown, I had to call his office 12 times to try to get his favorite recipes. And he gave me two great soup recipes. So it was something that I have to tell you, if I was doing this for any other reason, I don't think I could have finished it because I spent so much time trying to chase these down. At the same time, Obamacare was going in, and so I sent out letters, and no one answered. And then I realized that's what they were, you know, busy doing, and then they wouldn't answer the phone because the switchboards were always lit up. So I have to tell you, of all the books I've written, a dozen books, this was the hardest one.
Right.
But I think it's the best one, you know.
Right, to nail down all the people. And, you know, you are a speaker, too, and you've spoken all over the place. And you've spoken, you know, at the from whether it's a county fair somewhere to the CIA. Are they really uptight when you go and talk in front of the CIA? How do you warm up the CIA?
That was funny. We were invited to speak. There's a writer's group in the CIA. And since Steve and I both write books alone and books together, we have a book series called Recipes from Historic America, they wanted us to come and talk. And so that was really fun because they have two museums and you can spend the whole day at the CIA. And we were friends with a couple of the guys who used to be the head of it. So it was very interesting.
If somebody was going to Washington because, you know, or we're broadcasting the show from Washington, if someone was a tourist, what would you tell them the number one thing is they need to see? Because you just mentioned the CIA Museum. You mentioned Mount Vernon, Washington's home. What would you say somebody needs to see that's listening to America Tonight?
I absolutely think any of the main monuments. And to take – I was just there a few weeks ago, and I have to tell you, one of my favorite things, that after living there all those years, I took the Red Bus tour at night, which is the double-decker bus, and you sit up on the top. I think it's the best tour ever. And I tell my readers to do that because you get a sense of the city if you haven't been there before and that the guides are fantastic.
All right, Red Bus Tour at night. We've got to pick up the book. The book is it's terrific, Helping a Hero. I think it's fabulous that you're doing that. Capitol Hill Cooks. Pick it up, folks. Linda Bauer, thanks so much for joining us on ATN.
Thank you.